dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 93. Thank you for being here. A lot to talk about. International break. Fernando Santos. I've got a few things to say about him, good and bad. Big match coming up, of course, with Serbia. We, of course, next week, Taça de Portugal. And then the following week, we'll have Champions League and the resumption of the Liga B win. Also want to talk about the best futsal player of all time, who's Portuguese. You already know who I'm talking about. Want to talk about the Qatar World Cup next year in terms of the times. Something maybe you don't know about yet, and I figured I'd tell you. And I'll also do my second division report as well. But let me start off first kind of reviewing the Liga B win with the big and small clubs. Obviously, the biggest match last week was Benfica beating Braga 6-1. But, you know, when you look at these two teams coming into this match, Braga hadn't lost in line of their something like 9 of the last 10 matches. Fantastic run across all their competitions of Europa, Liga B win, and Taça de Portugal, as well as League Cup. So they go to the Estádio da Luz against the Benfica. That was, let's be honest with you, struggling, not just because of the two ugly losses to Bayern, but not really playing with the greatest results. You know, they barely beat Vizela. But the truth is, this is a club that's been struggling, and so much so that they are no longer in first place. They are now behind, although it's only by 1 point, to Sporting and Porto. But Benfica with the big win, 6-1, but it was really a costly win. We saw three players on Benfica injured in this match with Darwin Nunez, so he was not able to play for Uruguay on this break. We saw Rafa also get injured, that he was pulled out of this current international break. And then we also saw a very unfortunate injury with Verissimo. I talk about the time of their lives, like when I was talking about Luis Diaz a few weeks ago, where you're talking about the players playing in Europe, playing in the Champions League, playing for one of the big clubs in Portugal, getting called up to, in his case, to play for Brazil. This is what you dream of growing up. This is it. This is what it's all about. And unfortunately, now the kid has suffered a very serious knee injury, and he's going to be out probably up to 6 to 8 months. The timing of it is just awful for him. Obviously, this has started conversations with Benfica now that they're going to have to, in the January market, go after another center back. Ruben Semedo has been mentioned. He was also mentioned with Porto, by the way, but I know some of the unfortunate problems that he's been having off the pitch, that, of course, he still has the right to defend himself with, has turned off some clubs. But Benfica got the 6-1 win, and at the end of the day, there's nothing better than going into the international break than with a very good result. And to be honest with you, Benfica really needed that. Porto went to the Azores and redeemed themselves after losing to Santa Clara about 2 weeks ago. Ugly, and pretty much getting eliminated from the Taça de Liga, at least mathematically. They still have to play one more group match, but they have no shot of the Final Four, and they remain without a trophy in that competition. But they redeemed themselves with a 3-0 win, which is, by the way, the score that I predicted in my last episode. Luis Diaz, again, one of the best players in Portugal right now. He's going to make Porto a lot of money when they sell him with a brace. And Sergio Oliveira. Remember during the summer, all the clubs were talking about Sergio Oliveira. He was linked with, I think, Fiorentina. I think he was mentioned with the Spurs. There was a few clubs that were mentioned with him. And look at him now. Look at what he's doing, scoring. He's been really great for Porto. About a month ago, he was hardly playing. So you talk about getting a great reinforcement off the bench. He seems to be back to the way he was last year, particularly in the spring. So it's been a good set of results. And again, Porto redeeming themselves. Porto, again, have not lost in Liga since October the 31st of 2020. So they are now about 12 and a half months in Liga without a loss. Sporting, they haven't lost this season in Liga. They went to Passos de Ferreira, recorded a 2-0 win. Pote, scoring his first goal in a very long time in Liga. I know he did score in the Champions League, but he scored a goal. Ignacio scored the other. Very routine 2-0 win by Pasos. Vizela Estoril was a fantastic match. That was one of the matches I talked about last week. Vizela is just on a great run of form. In their last 9 matches across all competitions, 7 draws, 1 loss, and that was that very, remember that, was it 94th minute goal by Rafa? And they also had a win in the Taça against Vitória Setúbal. So 7 draws, 1 loss, 1 win for Vizela in their last 9 matches. And they drew again this weekend against Estoril, which manages to pull another point on the road. Estoril right now is all alone in 4th place, 1 point ahead of Braga. I still think, once you start getting to March, I still think Braga is going to be in that 4th place position by a comfortable margin. But again, Estoril really doing a fantastic job and still hanging in there with the big boys. And let me tell you one thing, by the way, about Estoril. First off, I'm surprised that they didn't make it to the groups of the Taça da Liga. You know, they started off the season beating Nacional in Madeira 2-1, and then they wound up losing in their next match for qualification 2-1 to Familiacão. And that's how Familiacão advanced. And, of course, as we all know, they wound up being in a Sporting's group. But Estoril, the only other loss was at home to Sporting on that bad mistake by their goalkeeper, 1-0. Other than that, they have been nearly perfect this year. You know, they're obviously still alive in the Taça de Portugal. So Estoril really has been a heck of a story this year. Probably one of the best matches of the season so far last week, Familiacão beating Boavista 5-2. Ever since Boavista lost to Rio Ave 4-0 in the Taça de Portugal, Boavista just hasn't been the same team. And they find themselves now all the way. They're in 10th place. You know, they're only about a loss or two away from falling even further. But Boavista has not been looking good of late. But Familiacão was in last place about a month ago. I was talking about how Ivo Vieira was on the hot seat. He even said he was on the hot seat. He said, you know, manager's job is to win, and they weren't winning. But they put together a few string of good results, and they've managed to climb out of the bottom, and now they are in 14th place right now. So, and by the way, much like I said about Boavista, one or two more wins, and they could just as easily be in 9th and 10th place. I mean, when you look at, you know, everything from, you know, basically Gil Vicente has 13 points in 8th place. And then you look at Familiacão, which has 10 points in 14th place. You're talking about 6 spots in the standings that are only separated by, 6 points or 2 matches. And with a lot of football left to play, you know, things could, really change, change a lot. But Familiacão last week taking care of business with a big win in the Bessa 5-2. Gil Vicente, Arouca, 1-1. Arouca's having a pretty good year, too. They sit in 12th place. Gil Vicente got off to a big start this year. They've got one of the best scorers in the league, Fran Navarro. But right now, they continue to sit. That clicking you hear is me on my computer. But they're in 8th place right now, Gil Vicente. Whereas right now, Arouca is in 12th place. So two teams in the middle of the pack. Interesting match, Tundela beating Marítimo 4-2. João Pedro, some of you Major League Soccer fans might remember him when he had not necessarily the most successful stint with the LA Galaxy, but Tundela on a hat-trick by João Pedro, all on penalty kicks, by the way, beat Marítimo 4-2. And of course, news came down today that Javier Velasquez, the manager of Marítimo, and Marítimo have parted ways. He's the third manager this season to leave. Daniel Ramos left Santa Clara to take a big offer in the Middle East, and Petit left Bisad, so he's the third manager. This was already rumored for the past week, and it finally happened today. Vasco Seabra is apparently the person that people think might be the next manager of Boavista. He most recently managed Boavista and Moreirense last year. So he is, in the mix for the job. This time of the year, I think last year, we had like 6 or 7 managerial changes. I think by the time we got to the middle of November, this year, only three. And, you know, we've seen clubs like Familiacong, Moreirense, Roca, I think at one point wasn't doing well, but they managed to hold on to their managers. But that's your Liga BWIN report. And again, no action until we get through the last weekend of this month. But look, it is as it always is. The top three, we know who they are. Estoril Braga battling for that Europa spot. And then, of course, down at the bottom, it looks like Santa Clara, Meritimo, and Bisad. Moreirense has been playing better lately, but they are not necessarily in the bottom three. So that's pretty much your Liga BWIN report. Second division report. Pretty interesting things going on in the second division. First off, by the way, there is no football in Portugal this week, except for, of course, the national team match. But there actually is one match going on this week in Portugal. It's a makeup match from week 8 of the second division that was rescheduled to this weekend, and that is on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Feirense from Algarve will be playing a Trofense, and that'll be one of the games that I will be picking coming up here in a few minutes. But pretty much the story last week with the second division. The big upset last week was Mafra going to Seychelles and beating Benfica B 3-1, a very big result that helps Mafra stay up in the top five of the second division standings. Feirense from Santa Maria de Feira, so you're not confused with the Feirense from Algarve, even though they are spelled separately. They got a big win. It's actually one of the picks I got wrong. They went to Académico de Viseu. And they pulled out a 2-0 win for Feirense. So right now you've got Benfica B with 23 points, Feirense with 22, Casa Pia and Rio Ave with 21 points each. And then followed by that, you've got five teams basically tied with 16 points, Mafra, Penafiel, Estrela Amadora, Nacional, and Académico de Viseu are essentially your teams that round out the second division. And again, there is a second division match this weekend, and that's, of course, Feirense at 1100 hours on Saturday morning hosting Trofense. And by the way, I said this again a few episodes again, and I'll repeat it. And I know some people think I'm dumb. Some people think I'm right. I think most people think I'm right, I hope. But, you know, it's kind of, I don't understand when the second division, I know they might have some players that they've lost to the under 16, 17. 18 or even 19 that play for some of these second division clubs, especially with Benfica B and FC Porto B. But I just wish that at least the second division would play during an international break. I know sometimes the federation wants it to all be about the national team, but the last international break, you know, if I remember correctly, Portugal played Qatar in the Algarve in that meaningless friendly on a Saturday. And then you have five matches on Sunday because Portugal didn't play again until that Tuesday. And it was great. At least you had some football going on Sunday. But this week, there's only one match. There are matches in the third division and in the districts and everything all the way down. But basically, this weekend, there's only one match. And again, after 11 matches played, Benfica B leads the way, followed by Feirense, looking to get back to the first division, you know, like they did a few years ago. Regarding my picks, last week I was 2-for-2, and unfortunately this week again, I was 2-for-2. Last week, I basically said that Estoril would go to Viseu and win 2-0. They wound up finishing in a 1-1 draw, so I lost that one. I did predict that Benfica would be Braga. I predicted Benfica was going to win 2-0. Again, I'm predicting who wins, draws, or loses. I'm not necessarily predicting the score. I'm just throwing in there for fun. But I said Benfica was going to win 2-0, and obviously we know they won 6-1. I did predict correctly. I said that Porto would win, so I was correct there. And I did predict the score correct, 3-0. So I got that right. By the way, Santa Clara, great win against Porto in the Taça of the Liga about 2 weeks ago. Since then, they haven't won. That's not the way to get it done. I mean, how do you not build on that win? I was complaining about that last week, and I think I deserve to complain about it again. This last week, I was 2-for-2, and the second one that I got wrong, I basically said that Académico de Viseu, Feirense, would end in a 1-1 draw, and unfortunately, fans disappointed me. They won 2-0. I predicted that they would draw, and that, in fact, didn't happen. So right now, I have made predictions on 44 matches. I have 30 correct, 14 incorrect, and I'm down to a winning percentage of 68%. And my goal, again, is to be at 75%. And about 6 weeks ago, well, actually more like a month ago, I was at like 78% correct. I was well above, you know, the 75% mark. But unfortunately, I have slumped. So not really happy about that. But, you know, that's just, you know, the way it goes. Now, my picks for this weekend, we don't have a lot going on. And I'm not going to sit here and basically make predictions about the, you know, the third division or the districts. But I will predict two matches. First, I will predict the only professional match this weekend in Portugal. And that is, I'm predicting that Feirense from the Algarve will defeat Trofense 2-0 on a Saturday morning. And as far as Portugal-Serbia, which I've got a lot to say about coming up here in a few minutes, about Fernando Santos, the national team. I've been right about certain things, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but I think it's going to be a high-scoring match. I think Serbia is going to come. They have to win. If they don't win, they're going to go to the playoffs. Nobody wants to go to the playoffs. But I'm predicting a high-scoring match, which, by the way, lately makes me very nervous because it's one thing with Luxembourg or Azerbaijan, but it's another thing when you're playing a team like Serbia, which has players that play for some very big clubs in Europe. But I'm going to predict Portugal will win, of course. I really do think they will win. And I'm predicting a score of 3-2-2. Want to switch gears here now and talk about, and look, let's just be honest, it was a very disappointing result against Ireland. Although Ireland has been very tough at home because they also took points away from Serbia. And I believe, I have to check, I think the only disappointment with Ireland is I think they lost to Luxembourg at home. So what's that all about? You know, it's like Santa Clara. You've got great results at home, and then all of a sudden you can't build on it. But, you know, in their case, they lost at home, I think, to Luxembourg, but they've come back, Ireland, and they've taken points away from Serbia and Portugal now at home in Dublin. Of course, they're eliminated. But at least they could say that people saw Cristiano Ronaldo play in Dublin and that, you know, they were able to earn 2 points or earn a point from the draw, of course, against Portugal. And, you know, I think that when you think about Portugal, here's really what I want to get to because, look, I could sit here all day talking about style of play. I could sit here talking about who should play over what, 4-4-2, whatever, the formations. I think to me, and it's important to understand, you know, we went to Euro 2016 and we drew in all our three group matches and we still somehow managed to make it through, thankfully, because we won the whole thing. We only won one match in regulation back in Euro 2016. And if you look at all the results of Fernando Santos, okay, Portugal beats up the small teams like they're supposed to. But sometimes Portugal, when they play teams that are pretty good, they don't play very well. In other words, Fernando Santos, as manager of the national team, is driving a Lamborghini, and he's on the highway. And instead of going on the fast lane, he's basically driving on the slow lane, even though he has all this talent. You know, every time he announces the roster for the call-ups, you see it on social media. People, oh, my, look at that roster. Oh, man, look at that. They do the same thing with the under-21 fans. You know, people just, you know, the national team, because of the fact that the players play where they do around the best clubs in Europe, you know, everybody just, you know, wow, look at the firepower. I mean, we've got Cristiano Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes, Jota, all playing on the same pitch. You know, you've got fantastic defenders, the best defender last year in the Premier League, Ruben Dias. You've got a player like Pep, one of the most experienced players, defenders in the world. Wasn't smart, though, to get sent off. You know, you have all these great players. And we still somehow can only go to Ireland with a 0-0 result. And I've complained about this even during the Euro, where I said sometimes we'd rely on Cristiano too much. I know he had a great opportunity to score tonight, and he didn't. But Cristiano has bailed Portugal out a lot, and consistently. Portugal, with Fernando Santos, has never been, even though they're leading the groups with the best goal differential, they just, I guess when it counts the most, they don't score a lot of goals. I mean, we lost to Belgium 1-0. We know Belgium's a very highly ranked team, but, you know, and we know Belgium's a great team, but, you know, Portugal, you know, if you're going to lose to Belgium, at least lose 3-2. I mean, how do we, with the amount of talent that we have on this team, how are we not scoring anywhere from 2 to 4 goals a match? I mean, how is this happening? And I think that's the problem with Fernando Santos is, you know, he's been coaching this team now for, what, 5 over 6 years. He's called over 50 players for the first time. A lot of the core players on this team have been with him going back to, you know, Euro 2016, or at least until, you know, they won the Nations League. But, you know, even when we won, like, the Nations League, I think we won 1-0 in the final. It wasn't a lot of goals. It just, you know, it just we don't score a lot of goals. And I've talked about, you know, the Bruno Fernandes, Cristiano Ronaldo thing where, you know, Bruno playing for Manchester United in the toughest league in the world. And Bruno has been fantastic. But, you know, I think we've got some players like Jota. I think he does well when he plays. Bernardo Silva, you know, he does okay. You know, we've got players like Cancelo in the back. You know the whole story. But we never quite get it together. And, you know, we could get lucky this weekend and draw, and we'll advance to the World Cup, not having to win our last match. But when you're a team like Portugal, you should be winning these matches. Now, it should also be said, had the Cristiano Ronaldo goal scored way back when we played Serbia the first time, then we would have been leading this group by, 2 points? We would have been leading this group, at this point. For me, I think, it's just a very, very big disappointment with Portugal that we have this firepower and we haven't been able to unleash it. And I think that's the biggest problem. And, you know, I talked about this once in a previous episode. I mean, who's out there that would come to Portugal and would want to manage this team and get the full potential out of them? And I don't know. It's not something, you know, we never hear about viable candidates to manage Portugal. I'm not really sure. I don't think anyone, you know, maybe in a World Cup year, someone leaves a big job in Europe to manage Portugal. Maybe they could bring it out of them. I don't know. But that's really the problem with Portugal is Portugal, if it was like a stock that you could buy on the stock market, if you're into financing, Portugal as a stock never reaches barely 50% of its potential. I mean, yeah, you're going to beat Azerbaijan and you're going to beat Qatar in these friendlies. And, you know, eventually you're going to beat a team like Luxembourg, even if they start off scoring first and scaring you. But at the end of the day, it's too much Cristiano. And there's just a lot of things going on with the team that just don't work. And I still like Fernando Santos. I think when you're a manager like him that's won 2 titles, the biggest one, of course, winning Euro 2016, I don't think you discard him. You got to remember, when he took over the team, Fernando Santos, when he took over the team back on September the 23rd of 2014, after they fired Paulo Bento, you know, at the time, everybody thought Paulo Bento was the worst manager in the world, if you remember way back when. But at the end of the day, he came in, he righted the ship, and we obviously saw what happened, especially when he, you know, made the prediction that, you know, he's not packing his bags. He's not going back to Portugal until they win Euro 2016, which he'll be forever remembered. But, you know, it's I think, a best way to put it. You know, he's driving a sports car on the Autobahn in Germany or in some place around the world. And he's got this sports car, and he's basically driving in the slow lane, taking his time. Maybe he's listening to some music. You know, maybe he's just sitting there with his sunglasses on in the car. You know, he's not in a rush to get to wherever he wants to go because his philosophy is he'll eventually get there. So what's the point in rushing? And, you know, let me not use everything that this car could do, you know, all the strength behind this car, all the firepower. You know, let's not bother because at the end of the day, we're still going to get to where we want to go. And it's kind of like he manages like that with Portugal, where we just, every match, we leave so much left to be desired when we know that tonight Portugal should have gone to Dublin and won 3-0. You know, there's no reason for it. Now, we know some players were missing because of the yellow cards. You know, Santos said that, you know, only one player tonight played in yellow card danger, and that was Paulinho. But at the end of the day, even the players that lined up today were, I mean, fantastic. I mean, how can you not say, you know, when you have Cristiano Ronaldo, when you have Bruno Fernandes, when you have, you know, Jota, I mean, how can you not look at that lineup? You look at players like Cancelo, what he does, you know, he was called one of the best at his position by Fernando Santos, and there's no doubt about it. You know, and then we have a lot of experienced players Paulinho is a pretty good player, Mateus Nunes, Gonçalo Guedes. I don't know. I would have liked to, I don't know about him for me today. But, you know, Andre Silva, fantastic, doesn't do very well in Italy, but he's been a heck of a great thing in Germany. And, but we haven't had a chance to do anything yet. And he hasn't necessarily broken through yet, being, you know, a national team striker. He's a great club striker, but he's not. But it's just all very, very disappointing that we have all this firepower and we can't do anything about it. And I think that, you know, for me, you know, that's the thing that really disappoints me the most is that, again, it's like Fernando Santos has this great sports car, and he's just basically driving on the slow lane, and you know, just doesn't do anything about it. Is not in a rush. Doesn't feel any such of urgency. You know. Meanwhile, even tonight, you know, he even said tonight that you know, it was a great result and all that. But you know, let's be honest with you. It could have been. You know, it could have been a lot better tonight, and it, you know, it should have been, you know, a lot better tonight. By the way, my misspoke, I was just looking at the box score here. Jota didn't play tonight, but the point that I'm making is when he does play along with the other players, he's fantastic. And again, with all the firepower that we had tonight, Andre Silva, Gonçalo Guedes, Bruno, you know, we've seen, I mean, we should just be doing a lot better. You know, any of the players that play on this team, we should just be doing, you know, a lot better. By the way, one thing I don't understand, it was Jota last time, now this time it's Bernardo, is the players come from playing the previous week in the Premier League. They show up at Cidade do Futebol, in this case, Bernardo Silva this week. He had complained about muscle pain, muscle fatigue, and obviously he's didn't feature in the game tonight. He's supposed to, you know, probably be available. It's the thinking right now against Sunday against Serbia. But what's up with that where, you know, doesn't he know before he leaves England to complain to Manchester City? Because that was the same thing with Jota. Jota, I remember, played the weekend before, and then he came to Portugal. And I remember all the Liverpool fans were very surprised. Where did this come from? And I saw some of that with City fans, you know, as well. So, big match for Portugal. Obviously, we only got our one player that, you know, was sent off tonight. Pep, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? But the reality of the matter is Santos has to go all out. I know, again, you know, Santos, he could play for the three, you know, the draw, and we're through, and mathematically that's correct. But hopefully he decides to drive on the fast lane. Hopefully he feels a sense of urgency, especially because they're going to be playing in the Luge, sold out, about 60,000, they say close to 60,000 fans. I think it'll probably be more like 53 or 54. But, you know, there's going to be all that fans in the stadium. Hopefully, you know, Fernando Santos will basically be able to turn it up and, you know, get Portugal going, because this is going to be disappointing. I mean, if we're going to go into the spring and we're not going to be scoring a lot of goals with this talent, then there's obviously a big issue. But look, he's not going anywhere. I think the current president's mandate, Gomes, runs through the end of the next World Cup. And I think, if anything, you give Fernando Santos the benefit of the doubt, because whether they win or draw, if they win or draw on Sunday, which I anticipate they will win, you know, look, it's about the fact that we did qualify and we qualified in first place. And, you know, remember, for a few years with Paulo Bento, we were going to the playoffs. We didn't even qualify for first place. So I think we need to understand that. And let's remember, we didn't have any ugly losses in group play this time. I think tonight's a very disappointing result. But considering that Ireland took a point away from Serbia as well, or, you know, drew with them at home, I think we could all say that we knew we were going to be in for a tough match, especially because they were very tough against us in the Algarve. And I think that's exactly what played out tonight. So, again, I'm predicting that Portugal will win 3-2. But this team leaves a lot to be desired. Again, you know, Santos announces the picks, the fans, oh, look at this talent, wow. And then all of a sudden, after the first match they play, we all kind of shake our heads like, how the hell do we not do better than that? And I don't know about you, but I don't get excited beating a Luxembourg or a Qatar. I know people who do. I really don't, or at least I don't, you know, at least I don't anymore. Moving along, big week this week, a few news items. Ricardinho, one of the best futsal players, or one of, in my opinion, the best futsal player of all time, announced his retirement. One thing about him is I was doing some reading about why he never played, you know, for, you know, football, soccer. It turns out that he was doing a trial when he was 14 years old with Porto. Apparently, he was with Porto's as a youth player. The coach that brought him in, the manager that brought him into Porto, I'm looking at the story here, basically, the manager that brought him in left. The new manager came in and said, hey, I'm sorry, you just, you know, you're too small. It's not going to work, especially for a club, you know, like Porto. And, you know, that obviously became the moment when he became a futsal player. He didn't play, apparently, after he was told he was too small. By the way, they said that about Luis Figo, too, by the way. And look what he did at Sporting. Not that Porto said this about Figo. I can't remember if it was Benfica that said this about Figo. But obviously, look at what Luis Figo went on to do. But he didn't play for 18 months after he was given that bad news. And then eventually he came back and he wound up playing futsal. And the rest is history, winning a Euro, winning, of course, the most recent World Cup title. And, you know, I've never been to a futsal match. It's on my list to do, you know, to see one day. And I just don't want to see one match. I hear it's fantastic. Just like I want to go see a basketball game, which I've talked about in the past. But very big news in Portugal that a legend, you know, we talk about how we have some of the best players in the world. We talk about how we have, you know, the best agent in the world. There's a lot of great things about Portugal. I think the Portuguese Federation is the best in the world with marketing and everything, you know, and things of that nature. But, you know, we also had the best player in the world in futsal. I believe he's still going to play club football. And I think he's going to play one more match for the Selección, probably a goodbye match. But what a great career for a player to take that disappointment when he's 14 years old and channel it to become what he did. And I think his path was always futsal. So he's done a pretty heck of a good job. So, you know, congratulations to him. But I would have loved to have seen him play first division in the Liga B win. I wonder if he said, hey, I'm not going to be playing futsal anymore. I want to play, you know, first division. I wonder if maybe some of the smaller clubs in Portugal might go after him. You know, he'd sell a few tickets, but I'd be very curious. I think he would actually do pretty well, to be honest with you. He's so creative with the ball that with the fact that he's playing on a bigger, wide, much wider field, I wonder if he could probably do a little bit more damage. I'd be very curious to know that. One thing, by the way, I wanted to tell you, obviously we need to qualify for the World Cup, which we can do with a draw this weekend. But very quickly, I noticed something about the Qatar World Cup. This time next year, okay, this time next year, we are going to be in preseason for the World Cup. The players are going to be at Cidade do Futebol, or maybe they go to a place like Dubai and do camp there. And The first World Cup match is on November the 21st. We don't know yet who's playing on November the 21st, but the point is that's the first World Cup match. So next year at this time, we are going to have a big break. We don't know how much of a big break it's going to be. They haven't said it yet because obviously we got to qualify first. But I'm only bringing this up in terms of talking about the World Cup. But check out the times. First off, the group matches. You know how they usually only have three matches per day with like the Euros and the past World Cup? This time they're doing four per day. And obviously they're doing this because by making the group play smaller in terms of getting it over within, let's say, two and a half weeks, obviously they're thinking about the leagues who are basically stopping play, and that goes into it. So next, when we have group play, that starts on November the 21st, the round of 16 starts on December the 3rd, so it happens pretty fast. But if you are in Portugal, the time of your matches, or if you're in London or Porto, is going to be 10 a.m., 1 p.m., 4 p.m., and 7 p.m. So how about that? If you're in Portugal next year for the World Cup, you have a game on prime time at night, and then you got three games during the day. That's pretty good. Now, if you're in North America, it's a little bit tougher, much tougher. Basically, because there's an 8-hour time difference between the East Coast of North America and Doha, Qatar, and that's where the time reference that I'm using for Qatar, it's an 8-hour time difference. So if you're in Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Miami, obviously some of those places, Newark, New Jersey, Fall River, Massachusetts, Bridgeport, Connecticut, all on the West Coast, your matches next year for group play are 5 a.m., 8 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2 p.m. So there's no big matches at night. There's all matches basically. And in a way, 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. isn't bad because if you have a good boss, maybe he'll let you come into work at 10:30 and you can watch the first two matches, especially if Portugal's playing one of those first two matches. But I found that interesting, you know, for the times. And again, we don't know yet how long the Liga B win break is going to be. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that next week. I think even though they're going to have this break, I wonder if they're still going to do maybe one or two matches of the League Cup. Will they play one of the matches of the Taça de Portugal? Now people are sitting there saying, what are you, nuts? A team like Porto right now has got 11 players missing international duty. Benfica's got something like 9 or 10 or 11, I think. Why would they still be playing while they're at the World Cup? And I don't know, if they're even allowed to play. I don't know if there's a blackout. But I was thinking, you know, maybe there should be some matches. You know, first off, the League Cup is definitely for the second team players. And, you know, you think about the Taça de Portugal third round, if you pushed it to November, you know, a lot of times it's the second team players that play anyway. But here's the other reason also. Also, common sense. Right now, when we have an international break, there's a bunch of players that leave to go on international duty because everybody's trying to qualify. But when you come to the World Cup, there's only 32 teams that qualify. So a team like Porto is probably only going to maybe lose four or five players, maybe six, or maybe more. Or maybe Benfica loses more. Maybe Sporting loses more. We don't know. But the point is the losses, and I'm just saying that because if you don't have football in Portugal for 6 weeks, and then you come back, You probably have to play practice matches, but I think 6 weeks is reasonable. I'll talk about that more next week and when they do announce it, but I want to be kind of the first one here to tell you the times and to tell you that it's, in my opinion, again, if they stop it for 6 weeks, I would think that's crazy. Before I go, I want to also talk about something that I always talk about, and that is, of course, my club. Everyone always asks me, who's my favorite club? And the one in my heart is Atlético do Arcos, playing in the districts. The dream is that hopefully they make it up to the second division. They were briefly in the third division, but the year that the bottom five of the group, the division dropped down, they happened to be among those five because they had like 12 draws that season. Otherwise, they would have stayed up. But big win this weekend for Atlético do Arcos. 2-2 draw with Valenciano. They were actually losing 2-0 in that match, and they came back to draw 2-2. Valenciano is in first with 16 points. Atlético do Arcos second with 14 points. And this weekend, the boys will be playing at Campos, which is in seventh place. So again, that's what's great about, I guess, European football, soccer, or soccer in general, is you know, the fact that you can dream, if you win, to move up your division. I think that's one of the beauties of football, one of the beauties of soccer. They don't have that here, of course, in the United States. And I don't think they do it with that, I guess, the new Canadian League. But, yeah, big result, I thought, last week, coming back down to draw 2-2. Want to give a shout-out to one of my followers. Thank you. I'm going to try every podcast or every episode to give somebody a shout-out, and that is to Neil Fernandez of Toronto, who basically listens to the episode. Thank you so much, Neil. But he was telling me, upon listening to my club, Atletico de Aracruz, that his favorite club is Caldas, from Caldas de Reina, beautiful place. And, you know, he was telling me about the history. That's a club, by the way, 3-4 years ago was in the Final Four of the Portuguese Cup. Fantastic story. I believe Eustáquio's brother, Pastor de Ferreiro, Moro, played for Caldas, if I recall correctly. So big time club that's had various players like Ricardo Esgallo, I believe, he was telling me, is one of the players that have played for Caldas. So thank you, Neil, for the email. And, you know, enjoy seeing you go down memory lane about your club. Your club, I think, right now is in the third division, but they've got the resources to be in the second division if they can make it. That's a pretty decent-sized city, much bigger than Arcos de Valdez. So maybe one day they do make it up to the, you know, they do make it up to second division. One last thing I also wanted to mention. They announced in Portugal, and this is related to football, soccer, the Portugal president dissolved parliament, and they're going to have snap elections on January the 30th, which is a Sunday. I believe this would be the Sunday after. I think that might be the day after the Taça da Liga final, but they're going to have snap elections. But if you remember, with the Taça da Liga final, that's played that weekend. And there are also other first-mention matches that go on. They don't postpone the whole week. So I wonder what they're going to do that Sunday. You know, there's been some controversy in the past when first-division matches and second-division matches take place during a big election. People don't like it. And politics, by the way, is very powerful in Portugal. That was a big controversy a few years ago. I think there was a Porto Benfica during one of the election days, and that did not go over well with some people. So keep an eye on that, because that might be one of those Sundays where we don't have matches on a Sunday, and instead it's Friday, Sunday, and Monday. Thankfully, though, we don't have you know, anything regarding European action that following week. All right, folks, this has been a pretty good episode. I'm going to wrap it up here. Again, thank you for all your support. Really enjoyed talking about it. Again, I talk from... not from the heart, but from the mind, objectivity. Thank you for those who like my comments, and thank you for those that don't. I always like to hear the other side. And again, I want to thank you all, and looking forward to Portugal, Serbia. And when I come back next week, we got a lot to talk about with Taça de Portugal. Champions League next week, some really big matches, particularly Porto Atletico. You know, we've also got, I believe, Benfica, Barcelona. So that's big. And then the following week after that, of course, we got Liga B win returning. So a lot to talk about next week. But anyway, I'll let you go right now. Everybody, please take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you next time.